Welcome to The Pen and the Yad. Join Rabbi Michael Siegel and author Jonathan Eig as they talk about this week's Torah portion of Naso, what you can learn from repetition, a lesson on the act and the intention of giving.
Now, you are a writer, but you are also an editor. And so I know through past conversations with you that you like nothing more than getting out your red pen and taking out extraneous words and phrases.
Especially on other people's writing, not my own.
Of course, because that would never you would never need to do it for your own writing.
No, I need to do it on my own, but it's more fun when I'm editing other people's copy.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly you can edit someone else's stuff. But extraneous words, extraneous phrases are a problem in writing, because why?
Well, they muddle thoughts. You know, you want things to be as clear as possible. You want to make it simple, and you want to make your meaning crystal clear. And if you have extra words, you're often blurring your meaning.
And that would apply everywhere, but in the Torah.
Except the Torah. Right?
Except the Torah.
Extra words are to be studied for thousands of years.
That's exactly right. Rabbis could be loquacious, right? Rabbis can repeat themselves endlessly. But in the Torah, when there's a repetition, there's an opportunity for a new lesson or to kind of delve into it. And this week's portion of Naso has a great example of that. At the end of the portion, the children of Israel are getting ready to dedicate the tabernacle as a site for sacrifice. At the end of the book of Exodus, the tabernacle was built, this portable sanctuary, and God enters the premises. God was in the house, so to speak. In the book of Leviticus, now that the first section of Leviticus has the mode of sacrifices and imparted that to the priests, to the Kohanim, the people are ready now to dedicate the tabernacle as a place of worship, as a place of offering sacrifices. And so this portion ends with that dedicatory moment that's going to come to a culmination in next week's portion of Shemini. And so the princes, the representatives of each tribe, bring a sacrifice to the tabernacle. And the Torah goes into great detail about each one of them and describes the sacrifices to their fullest. The problem is that each one brings the same sacrifice because no tribe is greater than the other. They might be larger or smaller, but each sacrifice is the same. So the question is, if God brought this text to you and said, John, could you do me a favor and edit this? My sense is you would have got the red pen out and just like said, well, here's Nachshon ben Aminadab, and he brought this. He was the first prince to bring the sacrifice, and everybody else brought the same thing.
That's right. Or you'd say the following princes brought the same sacrifice, right? Colon.
Right.
And we could save a lot of text, a lot of ink. We could cut down the time of the service. Everybody would be happy, right?
Except for the rabbis, of course, you'd be putting us out of a job, because here the rabbis are going to really focus on why the repetition. What can you learn from the repetition?
Well, so we could learn something from the colon too.
You could, but sorry for you, there are no punctuation marks in the Torah, so you have to deal with the repetition. I know that's a problem. So here's a for instance. Nachmanides is one of our great, great medieval commentators. He lives in Spain. He writes, he says, the Holy One wished to provide equal honor to all the princes by specifying each one's offering on its day rather than just subsuming them under the first one. In other words, if the Torah was written in the Jonathan Eig style, then the only prince that we would be really honoring is Nachshon. The other ones kind of, hell, they brought the same thing. So whatever they brought would not be considered on the same level. So it was a way of honoring each of the princes. So that's one idea. So there was a rabbi by the name of Shlomo Brouwer, and he says something different. He takes Nachmanides to task. And here's something that we don't often talk about, is that the rabbis rarely agree with each other. They will take each other on. So here's a 19th century rabbi talking to a medieval rabbi and saying, you know what, whatever Nachmanides said about this, I don't agree with. This isn't really about raising up every prince's sacrifice, but rather what he wants to teach is that every prince brought a sacrifice and each one brought it a different way. In other words, the reason that each sacrifice is repeated is because the manner in which they gave it was different. The attitude that they brought to it was different. And so that ultimately affected the sacrifice itself. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So it's not if everybody were required to bring the same thing and they did so because they were just matching what the others did or because they were told to, then it becomes more like a tax and it's not given with the same spirit. It's not really an act of love at all or an act of kindness, right? It becomes a duty.
It casts sort of a harsh light on what's actually going on inside. Because the attitude with which we give means that giving is not simply transactional. The bottom line isn't the only thing that matters. It does matter, and raising funds for good causes, one wants to be successful, one wants to support the institution. All of that is vital. But Rabbi Brouwer is saying something else. He's saying how we give has significant importance because it has a resonance to how we will give in the future. Here's an example. There are all kinds of charities that are raising money for Ukrainians, which is vital and it's important. So let's say that you and I had a conversation today and you mentioned, you know, that you and Jen, you decided you were going to make a sizable contribution to Fund X, which was helping Ukrainians. And you then said casually to me, well, I think it's a good cause. Are you going to give to it? So I'm thinking to myself, I wasn't really planning on it, but I don't really want to say no, and I don't want to be embarrassed. So I said, yeah, I'm going to give. And you then say, well, I think this is so important. I mean, Jen and I gave X, you know, are you going to give X? And so I said, yeah, of course I'm going to give X. Now, the manner in which you gave and the manner in which I'm sort of giving is, you know, they couldn't be any more different. I'm, you know, succumbing to the pressure of you asking me and setting an example as opposed to giving from my heart.
Right. Absolutely.
Now, the recipients of this, whatever this Fund X is that we're sending to, it doesn't really matter one way or another. But what matters, I think, is how societies function. What's the lesson that I should have learned, me as the donor, about giving? How does that affect society as a whole?
Right. It's not just about the merits of the tzedakah. It's about the sense of community you're building and why you're giving in the first place. I don't know why, when you were talking, I was reminded of this funny scene in Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry David and his lunchmate are splitting the check, and Larry David writes, you know, on the receipt and leaves a tip, and the guy across the table looks to see how much Larry David gave for a tip, and then, you know, ups it by 10%, you know, on his. Right. So the waitress will view him more favorably, that, you know, this guy is more generous. And then Larry David comes back the next day and gives more because he doesn't want to be outdone when he finds out that he's been out-tipped. But the whole point of the tipping has been corrupted at that point.
What we do in the Jewish community is that we publish what people gave. The Federation in Chicago publishes what's called an interesting title, the Book of Life, right? It's a fairly thick book where you can kind of leaf through and say, hey, what did this guy give? And what did this person give? And what did this person give? And in some ways, you would think that that's the antithesis of Jewish giving, right? Maimonides has a ladder of tzedakah. And the highest rung of the ladder is to give anonymously. So how could this venerable Jewish organization publish every gift Now, some of you can write anonymous in there, but lots and lots of people don't do it that way, and their names are in the Book of Life.
Yeah, and their names are on our walls and on our gyms, right. and in our in universities, they're on buildings, right? So
absolutely,
it gets really complicated.
It does get complicated, but I remember once I was talking to the head of the Federation. Turned out I was on a long flight with him. So we talked about lots of things. And I said, you know, I've always wanted to ask you, how do you feel about publishing all these names in the Book of Life? I mean, why don't you just forget this thing? It's sort of, you know, it's a little distasteful. You know, why should the Jewish community publish this? And he said, well, yeah, I'm happy to do that. But here's my question. Who's going to make up the shortfall of the money that's not given as a result of not publishing those names? Hmm. In other words, it makes a difference. It makes a difference. And there's an expectation in the Jewish community that you're going to give, right? That's a given. That's the foundation stone of the Jewish people. Kol Yisrael arivim zeh lazeh. Every one of us is responsible for everyone else. And so coming back to our Torah reading and to this conversation between Rabbi Brower and Nachmanides, it's not enough just to elevate each gift. But what the Torah is actually trying to teach you is that every gift was affected because of the attitude of the giver. And in our society, we do need those encouragements. And we do need to be able to speak to every person on their level. But I think at the end of the day, if we don't do that, if everything's just anonymous and everyone's left to their own devices, I'm not sure that we're raising each other up in this process or our society.
That's really interesting. And maybe that's why we can't have the colon and why we need to list everybody, is because we need to be inspired by our neighbors. And maybe it's not about jealousy, or it's not about keeping up with the Joneses or the Jacobsons. It's about feeling like we're all in this together.
I think that's right. And so I'm sorry to say, Jonathan, that sometimes repetition is for a good cause.
So you're saying repetition is for a good cause. Sorry, couldn't resist that.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Rabbi.
That was good.